Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to Buckeye Talk. I'm Stephen Means, that's Nathan Barrett, and that's Andrew Gillis. And we just spent our Wednesday afternoon in the Woody, standing, watching other people exercise. Ohio State had its pro day on Wednesday, March 20th for the 2024 NFL draft. Not the most explosive list in the world, Nathan, especially not, but maybe not the list we were expecting this to be when we were having conversations about what the 2024 NFL draft class could look like for Ohio State. The expected list was Marvin Harrison Jr., Tommy Eichenberg, Steel Chambers, Matthew Jones, Mayan Williams, Xavier Johnson, and Cade Stover. Mayan Williams is still dealing with an injury that he suffered during the season, so he's still rehabbing that. Marvin Harrison continues to go, I don't need the draft process. The draft process needs me, so he didn't do anything. He was in the building, though. He has been in Columbus literally this entire time outside of having to go to Atlanta for an award ceremony. So he's been doing draft prep, but it's just prep for the NFL season and not actual NFL draft stuff. Which leads me to believe, I wonder if he already knows who's going to take him, which is why he's not going through this song and dance. Because at least Caleb Williams out of USC did participate in his pro day today.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody else kind of in NFL media today, and they said that, so Marvin Harrison Jr. has a good reputation, I think, outside of Ohio State. People know that he's not some kind of prickly guy. They know, because it's a little bit of the opposite of the reputation that, frankly, his dad had. His dad was not media friendly by any means, but it is striking some people odd that he is just withdrawing from the process altogether to the point where he won't even do interviews. I think that's where it's people think it's odd. Like, even when he comes back to Ohio State and is with only, and I use this term only relative to the rest of the world, friendly media. I mean, it's friendly in that he knows us all. He knows our faces. Yeah. Not that we would never ask him a tough question, but like, he knows us by name, many of us. So even those people he wasn't doing press with today, wasn't doing interviews with. So that has struck people as a little bit odd. But Albert Breer, who had already done some reporting, I think he was the one who first put it out there that kind of how Harrison was approaching this process. And on Wednesday morning, he reported that there were, I think, 9 teams that Harrison had talked to in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And he said, the way he reported it was that Harrison or his people, whatever, went to those teams and said, do you need to see anything from him? And they said no.
So, well, there you go.
So that explains a little bit. And the way that he's approached this, whether he's talking to us is the thing of the least importance, frankly. And whether he's working out, it's for people who aren't familiar, like, the way Breer has reported this, and I this is what I've sort of heard from people too, is this has been about, instead of preparing for events mm-hmm. preparing to run the 40, preparing for whatever. He's preparing as if he were an NFL player. He's preparing his body to play NFL football. And those two things are not always the same thing. We've talked before with guys who, it's why they go and get like speed coaches and stuff like that, because they have to go prepare themselves to train for something. These football players, guys who've been playing football year-round and living football year-round, now have to go train just for the pre-draft process to do things they don't normally do. And Harrison, that's the thing that he's rejecting, I think, most of all, is that part of the process. And it's not, I don't think, an arrogance. I think it's just a, why would I do that? Like, there's no upside in that for him, but there's great upside in, while everybody else has to go do that, you spend 5 months, 6 months just preparing to be an NFL football player. And I think that's where he's going to come out ahead.
So turning this into, I guess, you know, NFL talk, if you will, look at the draft board, right? There, for with Marvin Harrison Jr., the Bears are taking a quarterback. The Commanders are taking a quarterback. The Patriots are probably going to take a quarterback. It's just whichever team is the first on the board that's not taking a quarterback is probably going to take Marvin Harrison Jr., right? And you could make, like, again, we'll talk about this as we get closer to the draft. You could make a case that Marvin Harrison Jr. goes fifth because some team goes, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and J.J. McCarthy goes early in the top four and they go crazy and the Vikings trade up, something like that. Wherever the top non-QB gets picked, that's the pick that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to. So I the interview stuff is a little weird, I will say. Like, the interview stuff is a little unique. But it's one of those things. I think there was this Caleb Williams report, too, where it was like, oh, well, he's not meeting with all these teams. Yeah, why does he need to? What benefit does it give Marvin Harrison Jr. to meet with the Philadelphia Eagles or Caleb Williams to meet with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? It doesn't, because they're not gonna pick him. They're not gonna draft the guys. So I think the interview stuff is weird, but yeah, I have never once really cared about a player, you know, not working out or anything like that. I saw that on Twitter on Wednesday morning and it was like, what does this mean? Is Marvin Harrison? No, it doesn't mean anything. It's just he's gonna be the first non-quarterback selected, and whoever that team is gonna pick him, and there's only a handful of teams that could realistically be.
See, but even with that, Nathan, I mean, we've gotten to know Marvin for 3 years now. And the first time I talked to Marvin Harrison Jr., he was still in high school. So we've gotten to know him. So even the not doing interview stuff for me is not weird, because we have seen him at times when he's not on the schedule to get interviewed, go up to Jerry and be like, hey, Jerry, do you need me today? Like, he has been very open with us. It's just right now, if he didn't feel like doing that, cool. And we've seen him as well in the Woody over the last couple of months here, doing different things, to your point, Nathan, getting ready to play NFL football, not getting ready to do NFL pro day, NFL combine thing. So nothing has changed in terms of how Marvin Harrison Jr. approaches this. He's just taking himself out of the public eye. And when, to Andrew's point, when you're going to be the first non-quarterback taken in the NFL draft, you get to set the rules for how you handle your draft process.
Yeah, and the family. So there's a difference between Marvin Harrison Jr. as an Ohio State athlete and then Marvin Harrison Jr. now on his own and maybe more as a member of the Harrison family. They've been a little bit more withdrawn media-wise. I'm not saying that again in a bad way. I wanted to do a story one time. Marvin had talked kind of extensively in a conversation I had with him about the example that his mom set and how she was, everyone talks about him and his dad, but like his mom was this woman who like got up at 4 a.m. and went to a second job or not really a second job. I mean, they weren't hurting for money, obviously, but you know what I'm saying? Like she was getting up and doing like extra things. And she sort of helped set the work ethic for him as much as his dad did, and thought, oh, that's a great human interest story, right? His mom is not interested in doing the first interview. And I'm not the only one who's ever asked. Like she does not do interviews. And his dad, like I said before, just not known as an open guy when he was playing. When he was at last year's media day, pro day, I should say, Marvin Harrison Sr. was there. And there was a sort of brief interview interlude there, but brief. Like he was like, I'm answering like two questions There's rules here. It was kind of a very rigid thing. So that may be a dynamic that's playing out here, because at Ohio State, there's only so much of that they could control. Ohio State's really more in charge, and there are things that benefit the team by Marvin Harrison Jr. doing media, whereas now it's not really, and there's not an upside to it. Like, he's going to, there is even such a thing as being overexposed. Like, just, you know, he's doing fine. Like, he's doing the work. Everyone knows he's doing the work. We see him around Ohio State. He was there today. We've seen him around practice. We've seen him working out after practice. He's just, locked in on that stuff. So, I don't share the same, I would say this, the people who are speculating about something being wrong or something being off are not at Ohio State.
No, and either they're not at Ohio State, and they probably never interacted with Marvin Harrison Jr. before, which is how this ends up happening. But Marvin in the building was watching around. Like I said, Steel Chambers, Tommy Eichenberg, Michael Hall Jr., Xavier Johnson, Matthew Jones, Josh Proctor, Kate Stover, and Mayan Williams. Mayan Williams didn't participate, but those are the other people going through the draft process. There were also some other people not necessarily associated with the Ohio State football program right now. Here for the pro day, Sam Wiggles, who transferred to Ohio University. Shout out to the Bobcats. Shout out to Andrew for that one. He was participating in today's pro day. Amir Reap and Jocelyn Wentz, two former Ohio State football players, were obviously removed from the team following some off-the-field issues that have since been settled off the field once again. So they were welcoming back into the building to be able to participate in the pro day today as well. But it's just not the shiniest list, which makes us, well, it's almost put on pause, and you could feel that in the building today. There wasn't a lot of juice around these guys. There were some reports out there that there were no GMs or head coaches in the building today. All 32 teams were represented, at least the OSU spokesperson did tell us that information, but there were no GMs or no coaches reportedly in the building. That probably won't be the case next year when we're having this conversation, and we're maybe comparing what next year's might look like to what Ohio State had when they had all those guys going through the 2016 NFL draft process with Ezekiel Elliott and Joey Bosa and on down the line there. But because of that lack of just juice from actual NFL draft prospects, Nathan, it just provided an opportunity for us to look at the quarterbacks. We got Devin Brown and Will Howard both went through pro day. They were the quarterbacks for Cade Stover and all those other wide receivers who were participating in that. Number one question: who went first in the drills? And then what was your overall impressions on actually seeing the quarterbacks throw the ball down the field for the first time this spring?
So I actually don't remember who threw the first pass, and I don't care. Because I did, I was talking to Xavier Johnson later, and he said that, well, he mostly threw with Will Howard that day, but only because both guys were off on spring break last week, but Will Howard came back a little earlier, so he had thrown with him a little bit more, so they just decided to keep them together as much as possible. So, you know, every little detail, though, gets scrutinized in these sorts of things, and that was something that was a big part of conversation. You know, Will Howard, we didn't talk to Devin Brown on, like, and do interviews with Devin Brown today. We sort of cornered Will Howard into one at one point, and I asked about this kind of constant scrutiny. Like, do you guys feel like this is part of the competition? Like, even today, where you know, all of us are over there scrutinizing everything you do. And he said, yeah, that Devin joked and said something like, I bet they find out who the starting quarterback is today. Something along those lines, like kind of having fun at our expense a little bit, because they know that, because they saw it after the first two practices when we saw 20 minutes and people came back and made their, all of us made our analysis of what they looked like in those 20 minutes. And it's just part of it. It's part of the focus. CJ Stroud talked about it when we got him for a few minutes. I talked to Xavier Johnson about it and about how the quarterback is a different microscope that you live under here. And, you know, these guys are getting a taste of that. Devin Brown already got a taste of it last year when he went toe-to-toe with Kyle McCord and almost won that job. And just the ongoing daily intensity of focus that goes along with that, of this big media horde that's over your shoulder. And I think it's a good sign that they understand it and they seem comfortable with it, and they're to the point that they're having fun with it. I think that's that they can, you know, joke about it and about how kind of silly some of the instant analysis is from these things. And now, long story short, we should actually, I guess, get to how they actually threw the ball, which was, I thought, kind of a mixed bag. I thought you saw some of the things you wanted to see from them building on what we saw those first couple of practices. You still seen good touch on deep balls. There were more deep balls today than there were when they were running routes on air in that first week of spring practice. And there were some balls that they definitely want back. I thought there were some from both guys, but definitely Will Howard had some that sailed on him. And I saw at least one for Devin Brown that did. And, you know, again, they were there to, as Will Howard said, it's like being the pitcher for Home Run Derby a little bit. Like, yes, you're trying to be precise, but you're really there to make the receivers look good.
Nathan, Andrew, what did you think? What were your impressions? And again, it's a pro day, so not only are they throwing on air, they're not even in pads. Like, there's no even helmets and shoulder pads going on. It's a game of catch with a bunch of people standing around watching you do it. What were your impressions, though, of those quarterbacks?
I just want to say real quick, not only is it a pro day, it's not their pro day. Yeah. So it's not like they were going out and doing the battery of throws that we saw CJ Stroud and Justin Fields do the past few years. It's just them throwing to the receivers. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, and to add on another point to that, it's not only that they're throwing to these receivers, it's that they're throwing to receivers that they've never played with. You know, like Will Howard hasn't played with anybody, but like Devin Brown is throwing to Cade Stover, and he's not going to throw to Cade Stover ever again, unless they maybe play in the NFL or something like that together. Like that's not going to happen, right? So, you know, I know some people try to read into it. I think we were, Nathan and I were kind of standing next to each other on the, like in the little corner that we were sectioned off in, and I think we were kind of making jokes, like somebody would make a throw and be like, oh, there's starting quarterback. Like, it just was one of those things where I just didn't care. Like, I don't want to sound like I didn't take it seriously or anything like that, but I looked at the throws and I wasn't dissecting like, oh, Will Howard's got a great release and you see how he high points the throw here and you see this is going to be great things for Ohio State come August. And like, I think what they do during spring practice is just way more valuable. And I don't really think it tells us anything because again, they're not throwing a full arsenal of routes. They're not like calling plays, making reads. You know, a big part of both of their games is using their legs, and they're not doing that because they were asked to like stand there, take a quick drop, and then throw an out route to Cade Stover, or throw a swing route to Xavier Johnson, or you know, throw a corner route to Sam Wiglis. Like there were guys that were there, and like Nathan said, that weren't Will Howard and Devin Brown, or it wasn't for Will Howard or Devin Brown. And I watched that thing, and I came away with no lasting impressions about either of them. And I know that might not be what people want to hear. The day was not about them. It was about the guys that were there. And there's just so much more that goes into playing quarterback than just throwing routes on air. I mean, it would be the equivalent of, you know, watching them warm up, literally like watching them warm up and say, what do you think? You know, go watch Ohio State warm up versus Michigan and say, all right, who's the better quarterback? Well, I don't know. I don't know who's the better quarterback. Who throws the ball back? I don't know. We'll find out in a little bit, but now is not that time. So I will say, I said this in one of our stand-ups, the one thing you do notice about Will Howard every time he's around is how big that dude is. Like, that is a large human being that plays quarterback, and we haven't seen them in pads yet, and I really want to see Will Howard in pads. So I guess that was probably my lasting takeaway of, like, you know, if this guy looks like this in shorts and t-shirt, what in the world is he going to look like when you put on a helmet and shoulder pads and, you know, there's a, you know, 5'10", 185 pound corner that's going to have to bring him down one day? That's not going to go well for the corner. So the size of Will Howard is really impressive. And I do think that'll benefit him when you get to spring practice and into fall camp, when, you know, you've got a fearsome defensive line like Ohio State has. Today, it was hard to take any meaningful critique from it. And frankly, I think if you did take any meaningful critique from it, you probably took too much away from it.
Yeah, the thing with it, their pro day, Nathan, was very similar to what CJ Stroud did in 2022 when he was throwing for Chris and Garrett. It's, they don't, everything that we are expecting from Devin Brown and Will Howard in terms of what makes their skill set important to Ohio State, they're just not going to be able to show. They weren't on the move. They're not doing difficult throw. It is very much just drop back and get rid of the ball. The only thing you can really get from the day, because it was really the first time we got to see them throw the ball down the field, because in the two practices we saw, we just didn't see much of that because it was later in the practice when we were no longer in the building. But you do get to see how strong their arms are. And Devin Brown's got a really strong arm, and he uses it on every single throw. It felt like every throw he threw was coming in hot, and you could hear hear it coming off of his hands, especially because there's no music going on. It's real quiet in there when they're throwing, so you can literally hear the ball coming off of his hands. I think that's it matches what you've been hearing in terms of that arm strength. While with Will Howard, I maybe he was a little bit more accurate today, but also to your guys' point, I don't know what that means when he's throwing on air and he's not necessarily having to worry about defenders and whatnot. But all of this is a small piece of the puzzle here. We haven't gotten to see much from these quarterbacks yet, just because they've had two practices that we've seen. They've had three practices overall. And as you're listening to this, they're going through their fourth practice on Thursday. And then we'll be talking with Brian Hartline and Tim Walton and a few more players. So we'll continue to put the pieces to the puzzle together. And then on March 30th, we're expected to get a full practice. So we'll get even more pieces to the puzzle here. But all this was is another chance for us as outsiders, as media members, to see these quarterbacks. We're going to take a quick break there, and then we'll get into some of the guys who it was their actual pro day today. I do think some of these guys did help their case. Some of them helped their case for 2024, but there's also some guys who I think helped their case in the future when they're going through this for real a year from now. We'll get into more of those guys when we come back here on Buckeye Talk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back on Buckeye Talk. We're talking Ohio State's 2024 Pro Day as a few former Buckeyes prepare for the NFL draft. A few guys who went through the draft steel chambers, Tommy Eichenberg, Michael Hall Jr., Xavier Johnson, Matthew Jones, Josh Proctor, and Cade Stover actually participated in today's Pro Day, while Marvin Harrison Jr. and Mayan Williams were more just guys off to the side there. But a few of those guys maybe helped their case going through drills and whatnot today. Andrew, I'll start with you this time. Who do you think helped themselves the most by what they were able to show at Ohio State's Pro Day?
Yeah, Mike Hall. Mike Hall, he was not at the combine, as we talked about. He was not kind of available for that, but he did participate today. We don't have the official numbers. I don't know if we're going to get those, but he said he ran in like the 4.7s, which is really good for somebody who is 298 pounds, like he told me he is. That's a really good size for him, I think. That's a really good weight for him. I don't know if he'll sit there at 298. I mean, during the season, he was listed at 6'2" and 280 pounds. I don't know if he's actually going to keep on 19 pounds or if his Ohio State program weight was accurate or anything like that. But I do think, even if he's playing at like 290, I think that would be really good for him. So he looked explosive. He looked fast. And when you're that size, not to say that Mike Hall is a bad player or anything like that, because I think he actually can be, really effective in the NFL. It's just you're limiting the potential of a position that you can play, because he's not going to play defensive end and in a four down front, and he's not going to play nose in a three down front or a four down front. So really you're talking like, can he play, a five tech over the tackle in a 3-4? Probably not. So you're really kind of limiting him to one position on the defensive line, and that's a three tech tackle over the offensive guard on the left or the right side. So I think that explosiveness, that size can actually be a benefit when you're that, low to the ground. If you're dealing with a guard who's 6'5", 6'6", guards in the NFL are not typically, 6'8", 6'7", like that size. But if you can get a couple inches on those guys and kind of be low to the ground, that explosiveness is really going to help you. And that is exactly what you needed to see. And that is exactly what you saw from Mike Hall today. So he's got a couple of weeks left. I'm curious to see what his NFL playing weight will be. But again, I I was really impressed with him. I thought he moved well. I thought he looked big. You know, he didn't look, and big in a good way. I think that that's important to say. He didn't look like he was sitting around eating cheeseburgers for a couple of months. Looked big in a good way, moved well. I thought he was good with his, you know, kind of short-term burst, short-term quickness. I mean, Nathan and Steven, you guys were right there kind of watching the drills in front of us with Jack Sawyer and JT Tumaloa. Like, I thought he looked good during those drills. You know, some of the footwork drills, he was, you know, hitting some of the cones. I don't care about that. I like the explosiveness of him. And I'm really curious to see where he goes, because this can be a really, really, really interesting, you know, kind of draft for him. I think you might be talking yourself into, like, could this guy go like second round, like maybe middle of the second round, upper second round? Like, I think you could talk yourself into a team really, really liking Mike Hall.
Nathan, I know you texted out to our texters that when he was going through the broad jump, you heard that he had jumped a 9.3. Then Ohio State had put out there on their social media that his bench press was 25, which isn't immaculate when you're talking about defensive tackles, but it's fine. But when you the way he performed today, mixed with what he's often flashed during his Ohio State career, even if it was never consistent for a wide variety of reasons, whether it was a lack of opportunities because of snaps or dealing with injuries or whatnot, but then also you pair that with what he was able to do at the Senior Bowl. How much has Mike Hall maybe helped his stock, in your opinion, as a guy who maybe was a solid, I don't know, maybe fourth or fifth round pick? How much do you think he's helped himself over the past couple of months here since he decided to leave Ohio State?
I mean, it sure seems like he's helped himself with everything we've seen and heard. You know, it was, you know, other participants at the Senior Bowl were very complimentary of him. The measurements have looked good, especially if he is gaining this kind of weight and still moving the way he is with the kind of speed numbers he's putting up, with the kind of agility he's showing. The 9.3 was what I thought they called out for him. Yeah. So that would have, I think, ranked sixth among defensive tackles at the combine. And obviously not everybody's at the combine and not everybody participates there, but that still tells you kind of where he stacks up. And he looked explosive today, I thought. And that's a big part of his appeal. That's a big part of his draft case, his prospect case. Because if you look at his numbers, and even just the numbers, if you look at the production, which I guess is sort of the same thing, you just didn't feel him all the time, and it didn't show up in the numbers consistently. There were some injuries, especially in that redshirt freshman year, that contributed to that kind of as he was breaking out, and he was also held back by injury. This past year, he got overshadowed by Tyleek Williams, but it was also a guy who did take up a lot of double teams and had a presence that didn't always show up in the numbers. So just because of that, though, I think he needed to profile athletically the way he's profiling. And things like the bench press also, it's all relative to, it's not just a strength thing. It's also length of your arms comes into that. That's why, you know, a guy with short arms like me, obviously I just crush massive amounts of weight on the bench. But for a guy like Mike Hall, it's probably tougher. That's all, you know, NFL teams know how do the arithmetic on that and put the whole package together. And I think he's putting a good package together. If those speed numbers are correct, if he's running, I mean, if he breaks 4.7, I think that's important. If he was able to break 4.7 at the size that he's gotten to, I think that's important. Because I think you're right, Andrew. I think teams are going to see, when you look at him compared to, let's just compare him to some of the other defensive prospects for Ohio State in this draft class. You compare him to the linebackers, for instance, in Tommy Eichenberg and Steel Chambers. You look at Tommy Eichenberg and you're like, well, is that a three-down linebacker in the NFL? Right, in the modern NFL? I don't know. You look at Steel Chambers and you almost say the same thing. Like, is he a more specialized player? You know how they fit on a roster. You know where they can help. With Mike Hall, I think it's a little bit more in your face. Oh, okay. I know what that guy will do on a football field for an NFL team. And maybe he's not a three-down player either. Maybe it is a more specialized pass rush situation that he eventually grows into. But that still has great, great value to NFL teams.
It's going to be interesting when we get closer to the draft and we do our annual prediction of where guys are going to go. Guys like Michael Hall Jr. and Cade Stover. Especially those two guys, because they're clearly not day one guys, but both of those guys don't necessarily play positions where you might be able to wait on those guys. So if we think in their day two guys, I think we might be all over the place with how we predict those guys. Some of the people I wanted to get into, as we talked, we kind of hinted at, since Ryan Day has taken over this program, it's almost become the standard thing that's happened here. There's guys who get to participate in pro day, even if it's not their pro day. The quarterbacks have been religiously doing it, with CJ Stroud getting to do it when Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave were going through their actual pro day. And then the very next year when he's going through his pro day, you see Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jaden Ballard being his wide receivers. I think Xavier Johnson was one of his wide receivers that year as well. And Mecca Buka and Julian Fleming probably would have done it, but they were dealing with injuries going into that spring. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave were the wide receivers when Justin Fields went through his pro day. Jameson Williams as well, before he decided to hit in the transfer portal and turn into a first-round pick at Alabama. And so this year, as we've already mentioned, Will Howard and Devin Brown got to do it as well, Nathan. But we also got to see Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau go through this process. And Tyleek Williams, one of Mike Hall's family members told me he was also supposed to participate. But then I went and asked Tyleek, what are you doing? Why are you not out here? He's like, yeah, I had class and I couldn't get out of it. Which, I mean, that happens there. But there's three defensive linemen going through it. And it's JT Tuimoloau and it's Jack Sawyer, where they're the guys now where it feels like if they're going to be first rounders next year or borderline first rounders, this was the first opportunity people got to see of them. And so I just want to pose a question to both of you, and I'll start with you, Nathan. Right now, with what we've seen in their body of work with Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau, and of course, we're recording this pod on March 20th. You're hearing it on March 21st. So a lot can change between now and when they actually go through their own pro day, if they do it and don't take the Marvin Harrison Jr. route. Who do you think goes higher in the NFL draft between Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau next year, Nathan?
Tremendous question. I think there's more momentum right now for Jack Sawyer. What I think is, what I'm really fascinated by is, how do these guys get profiled by NFL teams? Like, what do they project as at this next level? Jim Knowles was just talking a couple weeks ago about the idea of the double eagle thing and using them as outside linebackers at times. Is Jack Sawyer a 3-4 outside linebacker in the NFL? And if so, or is JT Tuimoloau? And if so, does that make him more or less appealing from an NFL standpoint? Does it make him, you know, more appealing to more teams or not as much? I do think that to be a high draft pick at defensive end, you've got to get the quarterback, right? Like, you don't see guys up there who have like 4 sacks in a full season that are going very high in drafts, especially by the time they get to their fourth year, which both these guys are going to be in. So I think right now, it's tough. Because I do think that the underlying all-around athletic profile for JT Tuimoloau is maybe almost a little bit underrated at this point. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about just who has been the most consistent all-around football player for the past 3 years. It's him. But maybe Sawyer is just catching up because he was just a little bit behind at the start physically. And maybe that's catching up. That's not an answer, but it's as close as I'm going to get to one.
I think it is an answer. I understand what you're saying there. Andrew, you go ahead. Who would you think would go higher right now, a year from before they even have to do a pro day, let alone get drafted?
I think it's JT Tuimoloau who's going to go higher. And the reason that I think that is because I think teams are going to get very enthralled with what JT does in Indianapolis and at the pro day next year. Like, I think teams are going to look at him and go, whoa, that dude looks different. And like, we all know it. He's big, he's fast, he's strong. Like, JT is a freak of nature. And I don't want to say, you know, that Jack isn't. I think when you map it out, though, I think JT probably has the higher ceiling. And I think that when teams look for what they're going to take in the NFL draft, if you're going to take a guy in the, you know, top 20, top 15, you're not good. Like how many picks did guys make? And you're like, you know what? This guy's probably going to be fine. And we're not going to screw it up, right? We're going to hit a single with this pick. We're going to hit a double with this pick. Like, you kind of get towards the top of the draft, you get teams that really kind of go for elite traits. And I think of a guy like Miles Murphy. And I covered briefly Miles Murphy when he was at when he was the Bengals first round pick. This was a guy who I think you look at the athletic background. Tell me if this sounds familiar. He was the number 7 overall player in the composite rankings in the class of 2020. When you look at his stats per year for his 3 years at Clemson, 4 sacks, 7 sacks, 6.5 sacks. Not exactly like lighting the world on fire. Now, I'm sure, you know, I mean, look, there's obviously mitigating circumstances. I mean, we all know that players can get double teamed and everything like that. But there's a thing called like a relative athletic score that happens every year in the draft. And he was, as of last year, 48th out of 1,628 defensive ends. That's per Kent Lee Platt, who does these things on Twitter. They're great. I would recommend checking them out. But it takes into account 40-yard dash, height, weight, bench, vertical, shuttle, all of those things. And Miles Murphy was a first-round pick. And a lot of the criticism about him was that his numbers weren't great. But the Bengals looked at that and went, you know what? This is a young guy. He's kind of coming into his own. He's an athletic freak. We can work with this. And I think that that is what a team is going to do with JT Tuimoloa. I think they're going to look at him and say, you know what? He's got the recruiting background, because NFL teams do look at that stuff. He's got the recruiting background. He's got the size. He's got the strength. He's got the speed. He's got the athleticism. And I just think they're going to map it out and go, I think his ceiling is higher than Jack Sawyer's. Now, that's not to say Jack Sawyer isn't going to be a good pro. I have kind of been pounding the table for Jack Sawyer and for Davis and Igbinosin for a couple of weeks now, a couple of months now, where I just think the NFL teams are going to fall in love with these guys, and they might go a little bit higher than you might think. But I think it's Tuimoloa just because of the upside that he can bring.
I think the season that the Bengals probably looked at was that 2021 season with Miles Murphy, 39 tackles, 14.5 tackles for loss, and 8 sacks. That's probably what they were looking at when they were trying to project out Miles Murphy. So here's their career numbers. JT Tuimoloau, 1,466 total snaps. He just played a little bit more as a freshman, which, Nathan, when we were having those conversations, you probably would have flipped that just because Jack Sawyer had been here for 9 months by the time the season started, and JT Tuimoloau had been here for 9 hours. But 1,466 total snaps. Jack Sawyer, 1,117 total snaps in 3 years. They both have 83 total tackles, which I think is hilarious. JT Tuimoloau, 22 tackles for loss. Jack Sawyer, 19.5 tackles for loss. JT Tuimoloau, 12 sacks. Jack Sawyer, 14 career sacks. Chase Young had more sacks in 1 year than either of these guys have in their career. That'll never not be crazy. It just seemed so normal when it was happening, and it wasn't. I think that I think you're both right. But
well, you can't both be right. No. You literally asked which one will go higher than the other one.
I know. You're both right, but for different reasons. It depends on what happens here. If Jack Sawyer turns what was the end of the season, and especially the Cotton Bowl, into that's what he is every single week, Jack Sawyer is probably going to be a top 10 pick. Because that's what types of edge rushers go in the top 10, guys who get sacks. And if he's going to be the sack guy that everybody thought he was when he was in high school, then he's going to go higher. But if Jack Sawyer is more of just that, and JT Tuimoloau continues to be what he was, which, I mean, his highest moment was the Penn State game, but he's probably not going to repeat that again. But he's been more consistent over the last 3 years than Jack Sawyer has been. Plus, to Angie's point, I think that athletic profile might turn some heads when he gets to Indianapolis next March and when he has his own pro day. If they're the same players and maybe like 10% better of that just because they're in year four, then I think JT Tuimoloau goes higher because he probably goes at a similar spot that Miles Murphy went, which was 28th, right? That's probably where JT Tuimoloau goes. Maybe a little bit higher than that, depending on, you know, teams and, you know, positioning, positional value and all that stuff. But I think JT Tuimoloau is a defensive end who probably goes in the 20s. While Jack Sawyer flashed some things that if it pops, he might be in the tens. So that's why I said you're both right. You're right for different reasons. And it depends on how some of this stuff, Nathan, plays out next year. Do we see fully realized Jack Sawyer that we saw at the end of the year? If that's the case, then like we might be having a different conversation about Jack Sawyer in terms of, you know, can he be the first defensive end off the board next spring?
I mean, and I don't dismiss that there isn't more out there for JT Tuimoloau also.
Right.
That you come in with this broader athletic profile, and that just has to be molded into an NFL edge rusher consistent talent. They're just both on the clock to do it. This is it. They got one more year. Yeah. So I'm open to that possibility too. That the things that we have seen from JT Tuimoloau, the heights that we've seen from him, I feel like we're saying the same things we said going into last year, except now we've got additional sporadic greatness from him. Like before it was like, oh, if you take the one Penn State game, and now it's like, okay, if you take the Penn State game and the Notre Dame game, or just the fourth quarter of the Notre Dame game, right? Like the heights are obvious. And if he can just, if he just more consistently do that sort of thing, and yes, probably add a few more counting stats in there because that is the position that NFL teams are drafting him to play, then I think that he could go very high as well. I think, you know, I'm not really ready to say which one has the higher ceiling just because I feel like there's untapped potential in both of these guys. We're not looking at somebody who has probably flattened out a little bit as far as how good they could be. I think you're looking at two guys who still have, especially in terms of consistency, still have more to go. But Sawyer was the one who, in the things that like that describe who he is on a football field, the rush in stuff, like that was peaking more for him down the stretch last season. So I'm very intrigued by whether or not he can turn that into more of an identity in the months ahead.
And the thing is, I don't think this is a who is going to be a better player conversation. It's just, I think sometimes with defensive ends, we look too much at the sacks when that's not the only thing that makes for a good defensive end. And I was actually having this conversation with somebody while we were standing there watching JT and Jack go through drills with Mike Hall. But I brought up the comparison of Nick Bosa and Chase Young for the 49ers this past year. And I'm not saying either one of those guys are going to be as good as they were as Ohio State football players. That's not what I'm saying here. But just what they were for the 49ers on that defensive line. Chase Young hasn't really been a sack guy in the NFL so far, but he's been really good in the run game, really good at setting the edge and all that other stuff, right? Nick Bosa clearly has been a sack guy. He was NFL Defensive Player of the Year a year ago. He's been a sack guy. And that's often what you see in the NFL is, you pair a sack guy with a guy who's very, very good at, you know, basically everything else you need to be good at as a defensive end. And it's, you know, one of the best defensive end pairings in the country. And PFF put out their rankings earlier this month of the top edge rushers returning in college football. I think Jack Sawyer was third on their list. JT Tuimoloau was eighth on their list. I just think that's what they are as people. JT Tuimoloau. And it's what made the Penn State game so special is it wasn't just, oh, I went out here and had five sacks, right? I had two sacks, but I also was breaking stuff up in pass coverage. I had two picks. I had another one where I broke up a pass where it ended up getting picked off by Zach Harrison. It was the full package is what made that JT Tuimoloau game so special. JT Tuimoloau, and using the Chase Young, Nick Bosa comparison, I think JT Tuimoloau is similar to what Chase Young has been in the NFL, while Jack Sawyer, in terms of what style of player they are, can be similar to what Nick Bosa is, where you've got a sack guy and you've got another guy who can get sacks. It's not like JT Tuimoloau has like three sacks, but that's just not what he's best at. And now what does that look like in year four, where you don't necessarily have the same guys at linebacker, where you might not let Cody Simon loose the same way you let Tommy Eichenberg loose at linebacker the last 2 years? So does that mean that we see Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau get to be more aggressive and not just be edge setting ends that they've often been the last couple of years here? So Andrew, what do you think of that comparison? Just the concept of it, not the names, because sometimes you say names and people automatically go, oh, they're not that good. But just that concept of what JT and Jack can be for Ohio State in 2024 and what that could mean for their draft stock going into 2025.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to ruminate on that. I don't hate the idea of it. The thing that they can do, I think that there is something to them maybe building off of each other. I think that that can be kind of beneficial as they go into this year. I think that that's a possibility. I'm sure. You struggle with the name. You're right, because it's like, you know, you're not going to compare him to those guys right now. You're just not. So when I look at this, I see a very incentive laden year for these guys, if that makes any sense. Like they can help each other. Like, what's it, help me help you? They can do that. Like, I think that if, you know, if one of those guys kind of is really playing well, then the other guy is going to get to play well, because one guy is going to get shade, one guy is going to get help. I like the concept of them building off of each other, if that's kind of what you're getting at, like of them having success breeding success. Because, you know, if you get one kind of hole in the dam of an offensive line, you can really start to get it on the other end too, and that can be, you know, huge problem for opponents. So if that's what you're talking about, I don't hate it.
So before we get out of here, anybody else that participated in the pro day today that anybody wants to shout out in terms of what they were maybe able to do today?
Yeah, I just, you know, Xavier Johnson didn't get invited to the combine, and I think I understand why. The Ohio State teammates were more mystified as to why he didn't warrant that. We've seen him. Listen, we've seen him the Notre Dame game, the Georgia game. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen him get on the field with the best teams in the country and make dynamic plays. So today was his chance to go out and show. And we don't have official times or anything like that, but, you know, it's just by getting this opportunity, it's big for him. He told me he had talked to 20 some teams at the Hula Bowl. He said that there have been a handful of teams that have kept in contact with him. So seems almost certain that at the very least a UFA situation for undrafted free agent situation for him, and to get a shot in an NFL training camp. Just a versatile guy who can get on an NFL. I mean, can help you in special teams in multiple ways, can be a guy who you're using him on special teams, but he also can be maybe multiple things for your roster at the same time. Like, he can fit a little bit here and there. So just glad that this guy is getting a shot. He's, there are very few personalities that match his that we have encountered in my time covering Ohio State, and just good. Just glad to see him getting a shot. It's been a long climb for him to come from, you know, walk on to where he is now.
I remember doing a story on him before the season. I was talking with his parents. I think just his journey out of Ohio State, I think he can like carve out a 10-year career as a special teams guy in the NFL, simply because, I mean, he's done pretty basically everything at Ohio State, from play running back to be a special a kick returner, play wide receiver. And as you mentioned, he's made some big plays in some pretty major games here. Andrew, anybody else you thought maybe helped themselves today?
No, not really. I mean, I was going to say Xavier too. I think, you know, like Ohio State had a guy many years ago. Many years ago, we played on the national championship team, which is almost 10 years ago.
Many years ago. That's
literally 10 years. Evan Spencer, he was a wide receiver on that team, but he was like a special teams kind of guru. You know, he was a sixth round pick of Washington, went to Tampa Bay. I think he only played like a year and then, you know, and then he retired. Like, I think that's the guy that maybe I think of, and I'm not saying that he's, you know, that Xavier Johnson is only going to have a year, but just when Washington picked him, when the Redskins picked him, it was, oh, this guy can do everything. Like, Urban Meyer praised his leadership. If memory serves, he was a captain on Ohio State's team. You know, he threw that touchdown pass to Michael Thomas in the corner of the end zone. Like, he literally could do pretty much everything. And I kind of get that sense with Xavier, where it's a coach is going to look at him and a coaching staff is going to look at him and go, wait a minute, special teams? Like, okay, check. You know, kick and punt, check. He can be a sixth receiver, check. If we have three running backs dressed and two of them get hurt in a single game, okay, well, now we have a backup running back that we can put in there, check. Like, I just think that he's just going to do a lot for you, and he's going to be a very hard guy to get rid of. I think that, you know, that's what you always hear in NFL camps and, you know, with in you know, college football camps too, where you have coaches say, make me play you. Make me put you on the field. Well, I think he's going to do that. And I think he's going to make it very difficult. I'm not saying he's going to get drafted, or, you know, if he is, he's going to get drafted anywhere, you know, day one or two, or even early on day three. Like, I think he's kind of a later guy, obviously, and maybe an undrafted guy. And when you're talking about him, though, I just think that he's going to show up and he's going to impress because of the things that he does well that are just going to keep him around. Because there's a dude out there from the sixth round receiver out of Pitt. I don't know. I just picked a school. And he can't play special teams or not as well, or he can't play running back. Like, there's just a versatility factor that he has that not a lot of guys do. So I think that that's going to matter. And I'm curious to see what happens with his career.
So that group of Ohio State Buckeyes doing their last official thing in the Woody as they go off to the real world now, no longer college players, are now professional athletes. And I will shift our focus back to the guys who are still currently college football players. We'll be back in the Woody on Thursday as you're listening to this, talking with Brian Hartline, talking with Tim Walton, and a list of players, some of which we'll be talking to for the first time as Ohio State football players, guys like Carnell Tate, guys like Brandon Ennis, and getting a sense for that wide receiver room, plus plenty of other guys. So get the text, 614-350-3315, two-week free trial, $3.99. After that, listen, there's no bad time to do it. Right now, it's a good time to do it because you don't get to see any football until the spring game or April 13th. But we get to see football between now and April 13th. And then we get to tell you about that spring football up until April 13th. And then we get to tell you about summer football and everything else. So get the text, 614-350-3315. For Nathan Baird and for Andrew Gillis, I'm Stephen Means, and that was Buckeye Talk.